Unashamed and Afraid, a show unashamed about sexual addiction recovery and unafraid of coming into Christ for healing, where we share real recovery stories, learn from experts, and share resources that actually work. So join us in being unashamed and unafraid. James.
What's up, Steve?
I just a lot right now.
There is a lot going on right now. Yeah.
So, the passion of people who are part of this movement is always leaves me speechless. It was not something that happens for me a lot.
That's true.
So, this episode with our new friend, Kehlani, and I'll share the experience we had when she showed up here. So, she walks in and people don't, some people know this and don't. We have a whole bunch of the team that's here, people. So when we record, there's like this audience sitting in the offstage part of all these people. So she walks in and we were just recording an episode before and we're like, hey, whew, like flood with all these people. So the nervous, right?
First time he is. Yeah.
And we started talking about purpose, sharing the story. And all of a sudden, this bold, accepted, and unashamed person came out. And that's who they're gonna meet on this episode. So we're excited for you. And if you want to also be bold, accept, unashamed, you can donate at unashamedandafraid.com/donate and become our outsiders. We're a nonprofit 501c3. So where that money goes is to scholarships, to resources that have been helpful for people in recovery. And if you're needing any of those resources, go to unashamedandafraid.com/scholarships.
Don't forget, you also will get access to Kehlani's bonus episode.
And the bonus content we record after the episode, we ask all the additional questions. You know, Kehlani's going to riff on all the other stuff she wanted to say about recovery and soapbox.
Right.
So some of the best content, to be honest. So with that, oh, turns out our friend Kehlani is sitting right here.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
So good. So excited to be here.
So we're in a snowy day in Salt Lake, which I'm assuming is not foreign to you, as you are from the land northward of Canada.
Yes, I am. There's actually way more snow here right now than there is at home. It's actually pretty nice at home right now, but
rub it in.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm here in the snow, so.
As we sit here in the squall warning.
Also, I feel like you and I connected on a deeply spiritual level.
Nanaimo bars.
Nanaimo bars. So if you don't know Nanaimo, how would you describe a Nanaimo bar to someone?
Honestly, I don't even know. Like, it's just so unique. It's this yellow, I don't even know. It's covered in chocolate.
Imagine if covered all the chocolate desserts in the world had a conference and Zeus struck lightning in and combined it all into a single dessert, you would get a Nanaimo bar. Does that feel accurate to you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, anyways, going to Nanaimo bars, point being, talking about recovery. So, when we were talking right before the show, you know, I asked you, why do you want to come on and share? And you shared with me that there's a significant age for you of 9 years old.
Yeah.
So why is that age significant?
Kind of just looking back on things, I realized that 9 years old was kind of my first exposure. I was just sitting in elementary school. We were just doing our silent reading, and I don't even remember what book I was reading or anything that it was about, but I just remember it made me feel a certain kind of way, and I felt good, but I also felt bad and knew that it was wrong, but also, like, I could not tell anybody about it, but also remember, like, being drawn to that feeling like I wanted more, and so...
So if we gave that feeling a word, what would we call that?
Oh gosh.
Like arousal, sexuality, yeah. Like what happened in that moment for you?
Yeah, probably arousal would be a good word. I don't even remember what this book was about. Like I was in an elementary school classroom, like it had to have been like so innocent, but that's kind of my first thing I can remember anyway. I've spent a lot of time kind of going back and thinking over, like, trying to piece together, like, my whole journey. And that's kind of the first thing that I can think of and really pinpoint.
Yeah, and so share with me. So you moved down here from Canada, living with some family, and as you shared with me before the show, you had again a profound interaction with someone who's age 9.
Yeah. So I live with my brother, my sister-in-law, and their kids, and so I think it was shortly after realizing some of my first exposures and experiences, I realized that my niece that I live with is 9 years old, and I don't know, when I look at her, I think like she's just a kid. So it's kind of crazy to think that I was at her stage in life when this all began. So if I could be a resource to her and to any other girls and to any other kids or adults or whoever it is that I can help take away just a fraction of the suffering that I did, anything would be worth it. So
yeah. So that suffering was like an immediate onset for you in that experience. When you were sharing at 9, you were like, arousal feels good, but then an immediate like, this is bad.
Yeah, it slowly turned from just that one book I found in elementary school to just finding any other content that I could. And I remember being really confused for a while because I didn't actually ever watch pornography. It was always just other content I could find on social media or something. So I think I kind of rationalized and justified to myself for a long time that I didn't have a problem because I wasn't watching pornography, because that's all they would ever
watching hardcore porn.
Yeah, because that's all they would ever talk about in like church and young women's and different things, like, oh, just don't watch pornography. And I'd be like, well, I don't think I am. They also, thinking back on it, I don't know if I was ever explicitly taught or told like what pornography was,
but I think so, that's so big.
So I think for a long time, I'm like, am I? I was like, I don't think I am, but I don't know, but I don't think I am. So like, I think I'm okay. And like, I don't actually have a problem like that. So I kind of justified myself out of it for a long time. I'm like, oh, and I don't qualify for this kind of help. Like I don't struggle with pornography. Like mm-hmm. That's not me. So yeah, I didn't think that the same resources would work to help. And I was also just very confused because I didn't know what exactly it was that I was struggling with or even watching or feeling or anything like that. So
yeah, I relate to that. Not so much like I knew I was looking at pornography, but not recognizing that really it was a problem. Because for me, it was, I kind of went through this cycle of like, I only viewed and it would be very briefly for, mm-hmm. you know, once every like 3 months or so kind of was my average cycle. And I was like, well, that's not addiction. So maybe I'm just uniquely kind of broken, you know?
Well, and I think this is one of those moments, like why I love the movement and I love your willingness to be on a stream, because I think you just put a voice mm-hmm. to what, I mean, millions of young girls are experiencing, because men, we get a very straightforward dialogue. You're totally sexual and it's bad. Wink, but it's awesome and totally be a man. But it's bad. And wink, but it's totally awesome and you're a man. Right. And so there's this like, there's this duality that like, that's like this expectation of like, right, boys will be boys and all the other toxic masculinity. But like, we have a place to put that, right? Where like, I just can't imagine not knowing like, what is actually porn? What is that line? Is this like, is it wrong? Like that just, like, what was it like, that confusion?
Yeah, it was such like a gray line for a long time. And I remember kind of like tiptoeing that line a bunch growing up, never really knowing, like when you go for like worthiness interviews and stuff, you're like, well, am I breaking the law of chastity? Because I was like, I don't know. Like, am I watching pornography? Like, is this something that I need to like talk with my bishop about, or
bishop, ecclesiastical leader in the LDS church,
pastor, whatever,
law of chastity, yeah, like sexual purity,
yeah,
moral,
don't have sex, but yeah. So yeah, I was always just really confused, and kind of felt like I was always hiding something, but at the same time, I could justify hiding something because I'm like, well, I haven't been taught what pornography is. I knew don't do it, but also in classes and things, it'd be like, well, we know you guys don't do this. So I'm like, okay, so there's no way I can be watching pornography because girls don't watch pornography. So I'm like, okay, so that's not it, obviously. Totally. But then I'm like, but then what is wrong with me? Like, what am I doing? So yeah, I just remember being very confused for a long time and feeling very guilty for a long time.
So how did that shape how you saw yourself?
I think for a long time, I really like separated that from how I felt about myself and from every aspect of my life, really. I never really tied it to who I was, or I don't really think it impacted me all that much, or not nearly as much as I realized, until more recently. Being in recovery now, I can realize a lot of things about my life now that are better that I don't think I attributed, like those sexual actions towards as a child, if that makes any sense.
Totally. What was the, looking back now, knowing, cause that totally makes sense to me. Cause I had some of the same experience. For me, it was the toxic masculinity, like boys will be boys. So I was like, I don't have a problem. I quit every night before I go to bed. Like, you know what I mean? And so I was not like, oh, these series of sexual experiences I'm having and all this porn might like be a thing tied together. I know you relate to that when you're like, oh, addiction. Turns out that's a thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, because I remember you sharing that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a thing. Now, so I, from that, I get it. But yeah, tell me for you, what do you think? How was it harming you? What do you think the side effects were of that confusion, that not knowing?
I think the biggest thing for me that I've realized a lot more lately was just a massive lack in self-confidence, which 10 plus years ago, I never ever would have attributed to like these sexual behaviors and things. But now I can definitely, realize the correlation between the two. So yeah, I think my self-confidence was definitely one.
Meaning you knew, you're like, I'm struggling with my self-confidence, but not connecting the dots.
That's why
this is contributing to that. Yeah.
They were just completely separate things in my head. Like, I think, the sexual acting out and things was completely separate from everything else in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now looking back on it, I can definitely like attribute and connect the dots between, like different feelings and actions and behaviors to that acting out. So
fast forward the story for us. So we're, 9-year-old girl, confused, guilty, don't know how to talk about it, have all this language that makes it more confusing that you're not even sure if you should be talking about it or if what you're doing fits any description of what people are talking about.
Yeah.
What happens from there?
I don't know. I sat with it in silence for a long time and honestly was just convinced that I would die with it. Like, no one would ever find out. But
there's like 10 heads nodding in this room right now. Like, you're like, uh-huh. Preach, sister. I remember that agreement.
And I was honestly okay with that. I was like, well, until I'm explicitly told, until someone outlines exactly what I'm going through without me telling them what I'm going through, saying that this is wrong, I'm just going to assume that I'm fine. And so it took someone I'm really close to reaching out to me, telling them that they struggled with pornography. For me to be like, oh, well, okay, maybe this is like close enough. So
you
had
a friend disclose to you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So tell me what that experience was like. And how old were you when that happened?
This was just like maybe just over a year ago. Okay, so 20, so Edward, 21, 22. I'm 23 right now.
Okay.
So wait.
So up until that point, you were like, I'm keeping this in me. I'm taking this to the grave.
Yeah. No desire to tell anybody. No desire to not, I wouldn't say no desire to change anything in my life. I knew that I didn't want that to be part of my life, but didn't know how to properly go about not having it part of my life.
Yeah.
Cause I had obviously tried like the white knuckling it for so long. Being like, okay, like this New Year's or like, okay, after this date, like never again.
Yeah.
Without actually getting to like the root of the problem.
Yeah.
Changing the, not just masking the symptoms, but treating.
Okay. So this friend is going to be the first person you ever confided in then? The one who came to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, sorry, I want to go back on a couple of things. James is going to ask you a God question here shortly. but the one that I want to go back to, so, because this is like the themes that we all think about in recovery, and I think no one has better experience than people who are actually in it, right? And so do you feel like the behavior was like, because you were holding it all secret, it was escalating over time? Were you like, the behavior's escalating for me? Like the acting out, you know, bigger, longer, more extreme, whatever. Or do you feel like, hey, I've got my kind of my secret sauce of how I manage everything and I just kind of use it when I need it?
Yeah, I think it definitely did get worse as time went on and as I got older. I think kind of when I was younger and when it first started, it was more just kind of me experimenting, like seeing, like just being a curious kid, kind of just like seeing what happened and where things would go. And then as I got older, it was definitely more something I would turn to like mask uncomfortable feelings or things like that. So yeah, as I got older, I definitely abused it more and yeah.
What do you think what do you feel like it helped you cope with the most?
I think definitely the biggest one for me is loneliness. Also, just when I'm like, it kind of, there's no like happy medium, because it could be when I was like super stressed and super overwhelmed with school, family, friends, whatever it be. Or also when I had absolutely nothing else to do and was just bored out of my mind.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was trying to find that happy balance between having too much to do and not having enough to do. Because some people are like, oh, well, if I'm just bored and have nothing to do, I'll just fill up all of my time. But that also didn't work for me, because then if I filled up my time too much, then I was just way too overwhelmed and then would still act out. So
yeah,
those are some of the biggest ones for me that I've been able to like think back and pinpoint. So,
you know, you talked about, and it sounded like you had some, you know, kind of an emotional response to just feeling a lot of shame around some of that more innocent stuff. Tell me about what's coming up for you about that as you think about and talk about trying to navigate. Is it innocent? Is it not? Like,
honestly, like this is something that I've still been trying to figure out for myself, thinking back on just like different experiences and things that I've gone through. I'd say like right away, I knew it was bad and I knew it was wrong and something that I shouldn't necessarily be like experimenting with and be so curious about. But yeah, something like I was just drawn to it and obviously like feels good, but also feels so bad. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was I didn't really have a way to label it. Cause again, like I wasn't watching pornography. Yeah. And that's, I think, the biggest thing that we talk about in society and in the church and different things. So, trying to find a label for it, I guess, and figuring out exactly what I was doing. Cause I don't think I learned like the word masturbation until I was like 16, 17. So I had zero clue.
So it's the, if I'm kind of reading it right, it's like carrying a shame around something you didn't even have language for.
Yeah. That's a really good way to put it.
But I think that's so, I mean, relatable, not to sound cliche, but like that's, I mean, my first sexual experience with someone was her introducing me to sexual acts. And I was like, oh, I wasn't like, hold on, let me go tell my parents what happened and they can explain to me what just happened, you know? And so grew up in church, you said, talking about going, and so not just like church culture in general, I think we have a baseline for that. Most people do, but So what was your relationship with God?
I think my relationship with God has always been pretty good. Obviously, as a teenager, you do things you're not supposed to do and kind of do your own thing for a little minute. But always went to church and always like knew deep down. But also kind of separated my like sexual acting out from God in general as well. Like, I think that was just so separate from every aspect of my life, which...
I'm curious why you separated it from him.
I really don't know. I really don't. It would have been a whole lot easier if I didn't, but...
Well, because I'm curious if the God you knew then and the God you knew now might be a little bit of a different guy. And so, what did you tell yourself? Or did you ever have cognitive moments where you told yourself, what, you know, sitting in church, or someone's talking about sin, or someone's talking about this, and you're like, yep, not going there? Or was it always just hiding in your subconscious somewhere and you just kept it above board?
No, I guess I definitely did have moments where, still kind of when I was trying to figure out exactly how to define my behaviors, where they would talk about just different like sexual behaviors and pornography and different things. I'm like, oh, you know what? Like, that really seems like it fits. But I'm like, but no, it's okay. We're not gonna talk about that. We're not gonna think about that. And then after that moment again, I would kind of just not think about it anymore. So yeah, I don't know. It would have been a whole lot easier if I didn't separate it, for sure. Cause I don't know if the God I know now is different, but I do think he's a lot better.
What makes him better?
The experiences I've had, he's just so much more encompassing when I let him into every aspect of my life instead of just the pretty ones or the ones that I want him part of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a question that I have, because this is where our journeys differentiate along the gender line, because I feel like, and particularly when you're a Christian woman, you get this narrative of you need to be wholesome and modest and, you know, just a really pure woman.
And basically not experience arousal.
Don't do sexuality. It's bad. With a covert contract undertone of, oh, and you should totally be a size zero, super pretty, wear makeup, but don't make it look like you're wearing makeup. It doesn't matter what you wear, but it does matter what you wear. Right. And all of the different, I mean, every part of the woman's body objectified, scrutinized, analyzed, that there is a perfect way to do it and everything else is terrible, right? Like, so the objectivity of that. And so, as we've had different women come on the show, there tends to be a couple polarized, unhealthy camps that are common that we've experienced, is that people have shared with us, of either, hey, I can use this to my advantage. Like, oh, I can use this kind of, I call it the Beyonce, right? Where it's like, oh wait, sex sells. So I can use this to get free stuff, get people to like me, get the validation I'm looking for, go. Or like total destruction of self-confidence because I can't reconcile. This image I'm supposed to be is like unreconcilable, which, holy cow. I think men have it bad. I think women have it worse. I'm saying as a man, I believe that, but, so tell me, what was that experience like for you as you were saying, hey, I've got this sexual arousal. I'm looking at myself in the mirror. I'm looking at how people interact with me. You get into high school and there's boys and all of that versus, you know, these narratives that were handy. What was your experience with all of that?
Yeah, I definitely think that contributed to like my lack of self-confidence, not believing that I fit like that, like Molly Mormon mold. That is like, oh, you want to be like super wholesome, super modest, but also like super hot and attractive, but like, don't like lean into that side of you. But like, we all know that like, that's what you should be. So I definitely think that contributed to it. And then also just, yeah, kind of the dating narrative in high school. I was never like, I got asked out a couple times by like some of my friends, but again, contributing to like the lack of self-confidence. I was never the girl that like all of the guys asked out or anything along those lines. So.
Well, I actually think you said it beautifully of how, I mean, you said how it affected your self-confidence, right? Because if we look at what you've shared so far in the story, right, is like, as a 9-year-old girl, you get this intersection of starting to totally rob you of your self-confidence in the back room. And then that showing up in life, like dating and the experience with, you know, which you and I now know from the education we have that like 90% of the boys you knew in high school are all looking at porn.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so they're all jaded in their whole sexual experience and lost in all of that. Yeah, I mean, not, you know, another shot at your self-confidence, right?
Yeah.
Where did you go from there?
I just wallowed in it for a little while, for longer than I wish I had, but it kind of all changed after, one of my good friends disclosed to me. Mm-hmm. And I actually started being like, okay, you know what? Maybe I can make a difference in my life.
So the friend was male or female?
Male.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's like, what? You're all just like taking a walk in the park one day. And he's like, hey, by the way, I just think I dropped some knowledge on you. So I struggle with pornography and masturbation. Just thoughts.
Yeah. It was after I moved down to Utah and he just texted me one day and he's like, hey, like this has been on my mind for a while. And he's like, you're really important to me. And I just wanted to let you know that I attend like the ARP 12-step.
Yeah.
The Church LDS, of Jesus Christ. Yeah.
12-step meeting. Yep, yep. LDS 12-step meeting.
Yep. Yeah. He said, I attend this at home and it's been going really good. And he's like, and part of recovery is disclosing to somebody according to those 12 steps. So,
yep. I mean, we don't believe in this story with people in recovery. We don't see any value in that.
No, not at all. I was that for him, and I was super glad he did, because then I was able to I don't know, disclose similar things to him, and I think that's when real change started.
Hmm. Tell me about that.
I think admitting it to like myself, because admitting it to someone else made me admit it to myself, kind of that I'm like, hey, I have a problem that's maybe a little bit bigger than me and something that I need some help dealing with. So.
Quote, Kehlani, admitting it to someone else made me admit it to myself.
Love it.
Preach. That's huge. Just said so succinctly. I think that just speaks to everything, the value of 12-step community, why this has value. So that was the first step of feeling empowered.
Yeah. And yeah, it gave me enough confidence to show up to those meetings for myself, but I definitely,
so that was the first move.
I think so. I'm pretty sure things are still kind of a little blurry and I'm still trying to figure out, but, like when I think back on it, that is definitely like the first moment I can remember where I was really like, okay, like I can do this. It's still absolutely terrifying and I don't really want to do it, but we're going to get it done. And so gave me enough confidence and courage to go for myself. But I still definitely, the first week I showed up under the guise of I'm here to support this friend. Mm. I'm not here for myself.
Oh, so you went with him to his meeting.
So I didn't. We have separate like men's and women's meetings.
Yeah, yeah. That was going to be my next question. Yeah.
So the meetings are separate, but we had.
So when you go to 12-step, no men in the room.
No. Well, there's a senior service missionary.
Yeah, people facilitate.
There's a man and a woman that facilitate it.
These are women. So you're in a room full of women who are saying, I am the one who looks at pornography and struggle. Or you're in a room with women who's saying my husband or someone I'm dating or someone close to me struggles and I'm here to get support.
No, definitely all the women are saying that they are the ones. They're not there for anybody else. Okay. But well, to get me to go, that's how I had to phrase it to myself.
Well, I say that because that's not an easy meeting for women to always find in a lot of areas.
Yeah, I think we're super lucky. They just started piloting it in our area for just young single adults. So we're all single. We're all in a similar stage of life. And yeah, they all go for themselves, but I definitely convinced myself that I was like, I'm not going for me. I was like, I know I can benefit from these principles that I'm going to learn.
I'm asking for a friend. Yeah.
So she was still working on the I'm admitting it to myself stage. Yes.
But it got me there.
And yeah,
For sure. For sure. And what was your experience when you went?
So good. So scary. but also not as scary as I think it is for some other people, because in my head, I convinced myself that I wasn't there for myself. So I'm like, yeah. So
good scoop of denial. Yeah. Nervous.
And so,
but it got you there.
Yeah. It got me there and it was so good. It was so refreshing to see people that I knew and like girls that I go to church with, mm-hmm. girls in my ward mm-hmm. that I'm friends with. And I'm like, oh, I had no idea. I'm like, they had no idea about me either. But
What about that was refreshing?
That, well, first off, I'm not the only girl in the world that has this problem. And correct. That, I don't know, people that I am friends with and love and admire, separate from ARP and recovery, are also there.
So what's the emotion that's coming up right now? If we gave that a voice.
Gosh. The first word that comes to mind is relief.
Totally. Well, and that was some of your experience mm-hmm. when you're like, oh, addiction's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a huge relief. I was like, oh, I can get help. Oh, I'm not alone. I don't have to carry this all by myself.
And so get the relief. What in recovery, was it easy for you to connect with others? Was it, because I'm checking back in on the self-confidence, because how did that look for you in recovery? Like, did that change things for you and you felt like, hey, I can be friends with some of these women, we can connect? Or was your self-confidence still get in the way of making connections there? Or like, how'd that work for you starting recovery?
Yeah, I don't think it was all magically solved right away. Wouldn't that be nice?
Rainbows.
But definitely helped a lot. And yeah, I just like became instant best friends with all of those girls.
Mm-hmm.
And because we could relate on a much deeper level than I could with any other of my friends, regardless of what the topic was. But definitely like talking with them, hearing their experiences, which are so similar, but also so different. Like, sure. Definitely helped a lot and helped mitigate a lot of that lack of confidence.
So tell me, the other question I want to ask, because again, I think it's a little bit of a different paradigm. Tell me about the word consent, because, and this is me, I often just use this podcast to learn and grow my own recovery. It's kind of selfish, but it works. Is I'm on the side of sexual addiction where, I'm going to find it. I'm going to see who wants to act out. I want to go to do it where, if you're right on the female side of it, there's a million people who would love to sexually act out with you right now. So, tell me like, how has that affected dating, friendships with boys, your recovery, acting out, just being on that side of it, because my experience is so different, you know?
Yeah, I've still never been in any like serious relationship, had a boyfriend, anything along those lines, but it's definitely been something that I have been more aware of, like putting myself in certain situations, knowing that, okay, just because I haven't like had a boyfriend or been in that situation doesn't mean that I am not likely to act out in that situation. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely something that I've been a little bit more aware of and been able to be a little more careful of certain situations that I put myself in, but hasn't really been a huge issue, except for, yeah, just making me more aware.
So when you walk in somewhere, and again, because I'm curious for me. So when I walk in somewhere, like Jeremy and I go to yoga class, you know, I walk in, this is the thought this is my shame narrative that goes through my head. Gosh, I super hope that I don't make anyone feel unsafe in this room. All of these women probably think I'm a total creeper checking them all out because I have this whole story and dark past, and they all probably think I'm this really terrible guy. And gosh, I don't want to make anyone feel unsafe because I've made so many women feel unsafe in my story. And I, you know, that's like, and my narrative kind of runs in that, you know? So that's my experience when I walk into a room. So what's your experience with that, right? That recovery, the guilt, shame part of yourself. What does it say and act like when you walk into a room? So when you show up to a church activity for the young single adults, or you're with some friend group, how does that show up affecting your self-confidence or the guilt, the recovery part? How does that show up for you?
Yeah, I think, well, up until now, like, nobody's known. So that's all going to change very soon. But I never really had to walk in a room and super worry about aspect.
But you know, right?
Yeah,
like,
I know.
When I walk into yoga class, none of these people actually know my story.
Yeah, yeah.
I just believe just that make, every woman thinks that I'm some creeper because I think that about myself on some level, right?
Yeah. I don't think that's affected me too much, really. Yeah, I can't say that's been a huge thing. I mean, it definitely crosses my mind. I mean, like, oh, if only these people knew, like, what I'm going to go home and do in, like, an hour. Like, they wouldn't want to be friends with me. Like, my bishop would take my temple recommend away. Like, just a million worst case scenarios. But I don't want to say that it's the main focus of my day or thoughts when I walk into a room.
What's been your experience now doing, you know, participating and actively engaging in recovery over the last year?
My experience in recovery?
What's that been like for you?
I think there's a lot of feelings that go into that. Mostly positive ones, but...
Would you recommend it?
Oh, yeah. It's so hard at first, and sometimes it feels so overwhelming. That right now I'm trying to really find the balance between believing that it won't always be as hard as it is right now, or was 6 months ago or a year ago, and that I won't have to live day by day, hour by hour, trying not to act out, but also because I do believe that will happen and will come. And I've definitely seen days and weeks where that is the case. And I can see that light. But also not getting too comfortable and complacent where I just throw recovery out the window and be like, oh, I don't have to work on this anymore. Like, life is grand. I've had a month of good days and no bad days. And, still making sure that I focus on that. So yes, would recommend.
So, so I'm curious if we just pulled out here in this room and we looked at the part of you that struggles with wanting to act out, how do you feel about her?
She's human. She's trying her best. And she knows Jesus Christ a lot better than the other parts of her.
And so if we could imagine if that 9-year-old Kehlani were here, if we had a time machine and we could bring it and put her right here on the couch next to you. Not the niece, that, right? Who's at school having that innocent experience, right? If she were here, knowing what you now know a year into recovery, if she was sitting on the couch here next to you, what would you want to say to that little 9-year-old girl?
That it'll be a long road. And as crazy as it is to say, it'll be worth it. You will learn so much more than you could in any other way. And it will bring you so much closer to God than you could get in any other way. And it sucks that you had to take that road to get there, but you're there and it was worth it.
Amen. So one thing, we're really big music people, I think, as you know. And so if you had a song that you feel was a representation of this journey that's been worth it for you, what song would that be? If you had a theme song of your recovery.
As of late, I've loved I'm probably going to say her name wrong, Leanna Crawford or something like that.
Leanna Crawford.
Yeah.
You're getting head nods.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. How you say her name. Lately I've loved the song Simple. So I can't say it's always been a part of my recovery and what inspired it, but lately that's what it's been.
Simple by Leanna Crawford. No, that's great. And I think that's a great representation because I think some of the stuff you've shared here on this episode, that you've shared on this episode, is simple. Like the truths of recovery really are so simple. And so, I love that. So just thank you for coming on and sharing your story with us.
Thank you guys.
And allowing other people to have the experience that you had from your friend, right? To invite them into recovery and doing it. So, if you want to join us and Kehlani for the bonus content, you can donate at unashamedunafraid.com/donate, where you can donate to us. We're 501c3 nonprofit to help us fund scholarships for people to get resources that are helpful for recovery. And if you're in need of a scholarship, we want to give you one. So go to unashamedunafraid.com/scholarships. Follow us on social media at unashamedunafraid. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. That's how the world judges us. And until we're with you again, continue to be unashamed.
Take a breath. The camera's off. You don't have to hide the fact we're all messed up. I know you think one more bad move and God will finally wash his hands of you. There's no such thing as too far gone with God. Nothing you can do to earn your spot. Nowhere you can go where he's not. No, it all sounds unbelievable, but believe. The devil lies and twists the truth. He's working hard to make you think it's all on you. So you play the part till you're exhausted. And when you fall, he's there to tell you that you lost it. Take a breath, the camera's off.